For me, if you're buying something that's in free fall, because that's what this bank was. To be clear, this bank is called First Republic Bank. It used to be ticker symbol FRC. Now it's FRCB for bankruptcy. So when there is panic, and I was in California when this was happening, which is, again, all beautiful, transcendent piece of information. I was in California. Everyone's talking about First Republic Bank. So yes, I lost a ridiculous amount of money. We'll talk about that in just a moment. Pain is a beautiful teacher. And the stock market is a great revealer for what you need healed internally. Because I put myself out there, right? Went on YouTube, did emails, told people, like, I am physically blaming myself, at least for a short period of time, that accumulatively I probably lost $3 million of other people's money.
All right. Well, welcome back, everyone, to the RLT Pivot podcast. My name is Tracy, and my co-host, Dan Jansen, is not here today, unfortunately. He is traveling today, so we will dearly miss him, but we'll catch him next week on an all-refreshing episode. But today, I have an incredible guest with us. It is none other than the CEO, Mr. Jeremy Alexander Newsom. How are you, sir?
I'm awesome.
I see your home. Yeah.
I love being home. I do love traveling, but it is so much more productive and better for my trading to be in my zone.
Yeah. I wasn't sure if we'd be interviewing you from Spain, Italy, the Buck Island, or wherever, France, Paris. I think you were in Paris just not that long ago.
Yeah. It was close to one of those things. But I was like, I need to be home, babe. Tracy will kill me if my audio sounds bad.
You were gone for a long time. Nah, it's all good. You, no matter what your audio is, you still have great things to say. So
thank you.
It's all perfect. Now, today, I think it would be really fitting, first of all, let me say, for people that don't know who Jeremy Alexander Newsom is, which I find it hard to believe that you don't, but he is the CEO of Real Life Trading. That is the company. That is, you know, the main, that's who Pivot Podcast is. It's Real Life Trading. So he is the CEO of the company, very successful, multimillionaire trader, full-time trader, and is just killing it. And recently, Jeremy, you set up a trade on what could have potentially been a very, very great trade setup had the outcome been there. And that was on FRC in this banking debacle.
Yeah.
Now, it obviously, we all know that it didn't turn out. The bank's just, that bank, whatever, completely plummeted. So
yeah.
I think that the first thing that would be really helpful for audience is your thought process around setting the whole trade up. Mm-hmm. Let's start with that.
Totally. And let's go into the prognosis and the thought process of two things first and foremost. So I'm going to say number one, how to get rich and wealthy. And then number two, how to protect it, because that's all that goes in line with this particular trade setup.
Okay.
Because for me, if you're buying something that's in free fall, because that's what this bank was. To be clear, this bank is called First Republic Bank. It used to be ticker symbol FRC. Now it's FRCB for bankruptcy. And the goal of wealth is to protect it. There's a very popular phrase called concentrate to get rich, diversify to stay wealthy. Mm-hmm. And at some point, you need to put some eggs into some baskets, for sure. There will be a point where you have to amalgamate a decent portion of your wealth and really, really focus it. For a long period of time, for me, I was buying Apple, Amazon, Google, Microsoft, Johnson & Johnson, Walmart, Costco, boring. Nothing special, nothing cool. Doing that intentionally because I know those companies are great companies. After my wealth begins to expand, I can start taking in what's called the venture capital world or private equity world as bite size or risk size. So you're able to take certain chunks of money and go, all right, I'm going to put it into this pot. And if this pot goes to zero, 100, 10, or whatever, excellent. Last week, I was spending a lot of time with a huge venture capitalist and private equity gentleman. And over the last 6 years, he's put $700 million into play into different companies and different allocations. He said 100 million of that 700 million turned into 1.5 billion. Wow. The rest of the 600 million lost money, broke even, made a little bit, lost a little bit. Wasn't any special, could write those times off. So you're going to have to take some shots. Sarah Blakely's father used to ask her every single day at dinner, "Hey, Sarah, what did you fail at today?" And then when she told him, she would have to explain why she failed. Yep. So this was definitely a failed trade on my part for sure. I was very open and honest about it. I told everyone exactly what I was doing. And the trade setup began. First Republic Bank was hemorrhaging money. It was a small local branch in California specifically, and maybe a few other states, but they have local physical branches. Silicon Valley and Signature Bank, two huge banks, had just gone under, pretty much crippling California. And this is a whole other story that's just like really, really glooming, in my opinion, in the forefront later down the road. But two humongous California banks gone, toasted, trashed, essentially in 2 or 3 months of time. And then here you have First Republic Bank that is sitting on the verge of like collapse. It's down 87% over 4 or 5 months. Well, what the Congress and the governing body of the federal deposits does is they get together and they have the 11 largest banks in the U.S. put in $30 million into First Republic and put them into deposits. So it lets the depositors know, hey, you're safe, you're protected, everything is fine. We're backing this bank up. We're not going to let it fail. And the cool part is when I hear this news, I know that there's one very, very important piece of investing, extremely valuable. When others are fearful, you have to be buying. So when there is panic, and I was in California when this was happening, which is, again, all beautiful, transcendent piece of information. I was in California. Everyone's talking about First Republic Bank. Everyone's describing it like, I bank there. I feel like they're solid. And they're talking about, no one's ever heard of Silicon Valley Bank except for Silicon Valley specialists and venture capitalists and private equity people, blah, blah, blah. And at the time, Silicon Valley Bank was at about, I'm going to pull it up. I know you guys can't see it, but I'll visually describe what it's doing. It's always bad when you have to put in a B at the end of the ticker just to pull it up. Mm-hmm. So when I find out about what Silicon Valley is doing, this is Friday, March 17th. The bank is closing at $23. It was at $230 a year before. So November of 21, 2021 is at $230. And now, you know, March 17th, a year and a half, it's at $23. So I say, okay, I feel like capitulation's here. The bank's coming in, news is coming in. People are terrified. People are fearful, but you're going to have a huge amount of relief coming in from other banks. Mm-hmm. So I come up with what's referred to as an absolute zero, which is actually the first time that's happened in a very long time, an absolute zero risk management style of play, which is a very, very useful style of risk mitigation. So yes, I lost a ridiculous amount of money. We'll talk about that in just a moment. But it was an amount of money that I was comfortable losing. And I went in knowing that this is a amount of loss where it could occur. So what you do is, let's say you buy a stock at 20. What's the lowest any stock can go?
Zero.
Literally zero, right? So now you have a concrete risk, $20. That's it. That's the most you can lose. So if you take $100,000 and you divide it by 20, you can come up with the exact amount of shares that you need to buy. So that's step one. Anytime you're going to play something that's in a free fall, that looks like it's going to go to zero. I mean, let's take Crocs in 2009, 2008. If you bought Crocs at $1.20 a share, right? You've 300x your investment, 300x. So it's worth doing this every now and then. There's certainly some situations, and very, very often this exact strategy has worked out very well. Absolute zero worth of risk. Then I take the amount of money, which in all transparency is about $500,000. I take that money and then I start tiering it down into different price points. So I buy some at 16, I buy some at 20, I buy some at 12, and I buy some at 8. So now I have four different prices called pyramids for me, which is where I'm kind of buying my different prices to lower my cost basis so I don't buy everything at $20 a share. Mm-hmm. Okay, cool. So the very next day, FRC, First Republic opens. It opens on Monday at 18 and it plummets down to 11. So I get three of my pyramids fill, not eight, but all the other ones, 20, 16 and 12. Then the next day on Tuesday, March 21st, it goes up to 1950. It actually opens at $15. It was up 43% at open.
Feel like so
I'm
a, not hero.
A moron, right? I'm up a decent amount of money.
Yeah.
I begin to peel a little bit off. I sell some shares, I sell some calls, and the stock drops back down. So I take the profits that I had made, which was about 40 grand worth of legit cash P&L gains. And I took that and I reinvested into the stock two or three days later, back at 12. And this was now Friday, March 24th. So that particular next week, me and my wife had an event at my house. We had a few people who were actually buying FRC with me. They come over to the house. Monday morning, the market opens and it opens at 16. So it goes from 12 to 16, $4, 30% overnight. I sell some again. Mm-hmm. Because again, 30% overnight is amazing. I mean, that's incredible. Sell some shares, lock in some profits, sell some calls, so on and so forth. And I repeat this process four different times. And then on Monday, the 24th of April, I was at Buck Island doing the Abundance Summit, and earnings came out that Tuesday. We had a rally on First Republic from 12 all the way up until 16, which again is $4 a share. And they were trading hundreds of millions of shares every day. At that point in time, I sold a covered call at 22. I bought a protective put at 10. So I limited my downside. And then, as we all know, earnings come out, news comes out, $100 billion of deposits were pulled out over the last 3 or 4 weeks. Everyone freaks out and the stock literally goes, it went from 12 on Tuesday to bankrupt that by that Monday of next week.
Incredible.
Yeah. So that's kind of like the overall story as far as a translucent time frame goes. And the $500,000 that I lost, that was not even my absolute zero risk. That was actually net what I lost on the trade. My absolute zero risk was going to be about $2 million on this particular position. What helped right. dramatically was that collar, Tracy, that helped substantially. The collar, selling the calls against the shares and buying the stock low and selling it high when it kind of popped two or three different times in the past. So that did help. And right. that's the very, very interesting and intriguing part of how you play stocks that are just in free fall, because there's a lot of stocks that are doing that right now because of the whole tech thing that happened in 2021. But this will happen again. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time in a very long time where absolute zero happens. Stocks right now at 38 cents. And a lot of my positions are getting liquidated and so I'm being forced to sell.
Right. Now, there's a few things that I want to touch on. Number one, first of all, the person that you mentioned there that was asked regularly, you know, what did you fail at today? Just so that our listeners know who you're talking about, that was the inventor of Spanx. Is that correct?
Yeah. Yep. Sarah Barkley.
Yeah. So, so she did learn from that, and that's one of her stories. So there you go. The second thing is when we hear absolute zero of $2 million, for a lot of us, that is an insane amount of money. And one of the things that I want to really highlight is that you pointed out very clearly right at the beginning of what you were talking about was this was something you were prepared to lose. So that is not a recommended entry of and risk amount for right. the average trader. This is something right. that, I mean, for someone that, you know, is only trading with $10,000, that, you know, that full $10,000 isn't necessarily what you put into the trade. It would be correct. Something that you could lose. So remember that that's correct. All proportional.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. I'm glad you're mentioning that because that's an important keynote, right? A lot of people, when they see me, they're like, oh, I want to be like Newsom. But they forget the 15 years of doing this 18 hours a day.
Right. Well, and like I said, they see $2 million and they think load the boat. And that $2 million, when retrospect to the actual portfolio that you have of all of the income investments and all of that, is not loading the boat necessarily. Right. But we have to remember that and take that into consideration, because I think a lot of individuals can get themselves into some serious trouble by thinking loading the boat is different than what you and I might consider an absolute zero or a risk play. Right. So I remember, what was the last one? Fastly. Was it last year or the year before? A lot of people got stung with Fastly. same thing, mm-hmm. right? So I appreciate that. I appreciate your honesty and I appreciate the transparency. Now,
sure, absolutely.
One of the other things that I really get from that was that, number one, you also stuck with your plan. You didn't panic, yet you still implemented some hedging strategies. So how long did it take you as a trader to get to a point where you could start implementing those hedging strategies instead of just kind of staring at it going, oops, this was a mistake?
Pain is a beautiful teacher. And the stock market is a great revealer for what you need healed internally. And for me, it really was just the story and the journey of wealth and the awareness of how wealth is created in the stock market and just repetitionally being aware of how much money is moving in and out of the market every day. I'll take a random stock that I'm in. I have 3,600 shares of Carnival Cruise Lines and I'm up $6,000 on it right now. It's not important. It's not special at all. But Carnival Cruise Lines trades $250 million US every single day on average. Random stock, not special, not important, not cool, not unique. Just a random $250 million every day. Every day. So it's like when you start putting the money and the numbers out there all the time, it's very, very crucial for you to just know how that wealth gets made. Like we need to be aware of it and to see it and to really be in it, because when we are there, it allows us to believe that it's possible for us. Because when you're talking about the proportions of this wealth and the hedging, when I first started trading, I made some really good returns, 20, 30% every quarter on larger sums of capital, right? Other people's money, taking eventually 400,000, turning it into 1.2 million over about the course of a year. And that was trading margin. And then losing all of it and going, number one, how? Number two, why? And number three, is there anything I could have done to prevent that?
Mm-hmm.
And then back trading, going back in time, even after I know what happens on the stock and looking at it and interacting with it and seeing how important it is to hedge. And then, Tracy, talking to numerous, I mean, hundreds of thousands of people in my career who have no clue that you can even hedge and protect yourself. So all of those things factoring in come down to, yeah, hedging is extremely important because you can make as much money as you want to in the markets. This is a fun quote. 90% of millionaires are made from real estate. 100% of billionaires are made from equities.
Interesting.
Yeah. So what that means is like, you got to have equities. You got to own shares of a company to really become extremely, extremely wealthy and impactful. So with this level of wealth that we're talking about, in order to get there, you have to protect your downside. You need to know what your risk is. You need to know what your overall investment thesis is on everything. And every single person I've ever interviewed and talked to ever have had big losses, but their wins have outweighed their losses. And you need to be aware of your risk on every single trade. You need to know how to protect it for sure.
Now, what you just explained to me, there's one thing that I want to pull out of that because I think it gets missed an awful lot. And that is that you took 400,000, made it to 1.2 million and then lost it all. And then you sat there and you asked yourself why and how. And I'm sure that's what a lot of individuals would do when they have big losses, is ask what happened, how did it happen? And you can come up to a couple of conclusions. One of them is, man, I'm an idiot. how could I have done that? Man, I wish I could take that back. The thing that I'm grasping from what you're saying, though, is the difference between a lot of individuals and yourself was you actually took that information and learned from it. Mm-hmm. You took that information and then you took action. And that, I think, is something that is extremely pivotal out of what you just said for people that are struggling or are experiencing crucial losses at this particular moment in time that might be listening to this, is that the losses happen. Can't do anything about it. The next step, though, is to still evaluate what happened with those losses and then take a step forward and start heading in the direction that you're wanting to go. During that time, did you ever, first of all, did you have dreams at that time, or was it still like I don't know how self-evolved you were at that time or how, you know, into really focusing on your future and what have you. So I know you were pretty young when that happened. Where was your head at?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was 20 and turned 21 when that was occurring in my life. And I mean, my dreams at that point were, I had so much going on. I mean, the 20s, the whole 20s for me sucked for sure. There was a lot of pain there. But that being said, the 20 to 21 timeframe for me was get dad's approval. This is all subconscious, but consciously have a good job, get money, have people be proud of me. I wanted to feel significant. I never really accomplished anything massive in life, in my definition of massive. And so I wanted people to tell me how great I was, because in the religion that I was a part of at the time, you could not have any kind of significance. You were not ever great. There's nothing you could ever do that should stand out, shine, or be amazing, or be rewarded. And so for that first time in my life, I was like, oh, shoot, this is what I'm about to do. I'm going to have a great job, 401k, company car, credit card, suit and tie, cubicle, guaranteed income, W-2, and then also stock trader, going to college, graduating. I was really going after what's referred to in the self-improvement world as significance. Mm-hmm. I wanted to feel significant. And I wanted my dad to tell me that he loved me and he was proud of me and that he cared about me. That's really what all of that was for.
Right.
And the beautiful truth is, for a lot of individuals that trade, they're still dealing with those pieces.
Right.
And they're unaware of it. Mm-hmm. I just talked to a gentleman yesterday, or was it the day before? Last 48 hours, his name is Tristan. And he talked about making a bunch of money and then losing it. And that's happened to him numerous times, two or three times, where he's made $100,000 or $200,000 in business or in trading or whatever, and then loses it all. And he's like, why is that? I'm like, dude, that's an internal thing, man. Right. That's an awareness of self, an awareness of value, an awareness of worthiness. That is a struggle between you and parents, grandparents, aunts, uncles, cousins. It's a family thing. Mm-hmm. And it's unfortunate, but it's generally going to be there because that's what impacts the most amount of people. Mm-hmm. And yeah, for me, that's really what my thoughts were. And the big dream, I didn't really have any at the time. I mean, the biggest dream I think I had at the age of 21 was probably to become a professional comedian, because I was still doing comedy, maybe become a syndicated radio host, something like that. But it was very much career oriented.
Gotcha. Well, that pursuit of significance, regardless of whether you had a why, I mean, it helped get you here. I think it's a driving force for ambition, whether it helps you keep that. And I think that's where the difficulty is. A lot of people can make it. It's hard to keep it. And the making it comes from that ambition. The keeping it comes from personal development and growth. And you've done a lot there, right? So I think that, you know, you've grown a lot since then. And now let's go back, I guess, to this FRC debacle. So, you know, you've come a long way from losing big sums of money to now being able to invest and do zero sum plays of money that's actually more than what you lost originally. So obviously the growth is definitely there. How do you, because did it not feel like a kick in the teeth? Regardless of whether or not it was a planned trade and it was still the zero sum play. And
yeah. Oh yeah. 100%. Absolutely. Okay. That's why at the very beginning, I brought up the whole failure thing. That was a failure for me. People can call it whatever they want. Cause I put myself out there, right? Went on YouTube, did emails, told people, like, I am physically blaming myself, at least for a short period of time, that accumulatively I probably lost $3 million of other people's money.
Right.
Just because I did something and they all did it with me. And in the grand scheme of things, I have to sit down and go, okay, does anyone care? Did anyone make fun of you? Did anyone say you're a horrible person? And the answer is actually no, because every time I either win or lose, it's all from a specific place of heart. If people are going to blame me for their losses, then they better blame me for their wins also.
Right.